Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 7 of K-Talks. I'm your host, Kay Bellows, and today I interview a very special guest and dear friend of mine, and we dive into all things yoga, how it can transform your life, mental health, and how yoga can really teach you to develop more awareness off and on the mat. I'm so excited to share this episode with you. I hope you enjoy it. So let's dive in. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 7 of K-Talks. Oh my goodness, 7's my lucky number. And I have a very, very special guest to introduce to you on the podcast today. She's become a very good and dear friend of mine. And weirdly enough, we actually haven't physically met in person, which is just crazy to think about because it just doesn't feel like that. We are both actually sponsored through the yoga app Allo Moves. So that's how we originally got connected. And we realized pretty quickly that we were just soul sisters. And she's just such a beautiful soul. And I have so much love and respect for this woman. She is a full-time yoga teacher and also currently getting her degree in the health and wellness space. She's completed many yoga trainings to further her education and to better serve her students. She's really just a believer in integrative and complementary medicine practices. She's a lover of food, of dogs, of books, and a lover of love, which I love. Ladies and gentlemen, my dear friend, Shauna Murphy, welcome to K-Talks.
Thank you. Thank you. It's so funny. Right after you said episode 7, I was like, what, lucky number 7? Like, that was my initial reaction that I had to like refrain from doing.
Oh my God, I love that. I was going to say, is 7 your lucky number too?
I don't believe in lucky numbers, but maybe I could start.
Well, I think for me, like, the reason why I love 7 is because my full name, like Kristen Lorene Bellows, is like 777. So it's just really interesting. I'm like, okay, like 7s just kind of are very prominent in my life. And I don't like totally know what it means. But anyway, on interesting topics. These are our everyday conversations, guys. So you're just really getting like a snapshot into what we normally just talk about. Right. Oh, so funny. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. You're my second guest on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. And first, I just wanted to, I guess, ask you, like, how, like, tell everyone about your story. Like, how did yoga find you? And when did you know you wanted to share yoga with others through teaching?
I would like to think that my relationship with yoga at first was like on the rocks. It was something that I dabbled in and then like would stop, dabbled and stopped, dabbled and stopped. And it wasn't until my husband's uncle, who's actually a Reiki master, was working on me energetically when I was like super into weightlifting. Like that's all I wanted to do. That's all I like spent my extracurricular time doing. He was like, yo, your body is so tight that like you're just gonna injure yourself if you don't do something to relax it and like de-stress it. Mm-hmm. So he suggested yoga, and I think my rocky relationship really stemmed from like trying YouTube videos, taking soft classes. I didn't really find the style of yoga that touched me in a way that I couldn't look away until I turned to like the Hatha, Ashtanga, Power Vinyasa type of situation. Sorry, I feel like there's a FedEx. Yep. Oh.
Keeping it real. We got a FedEx at the door.
I was just worried my dog was going to bark because she's not best with the UPS drivers.
Aw, I feel like all animals are like that though. Mm-hmm. So how many years then have you been really, I guess, deep in your yoga practice? Like how long has it been and how long have you been teaching for?
So deep in my practice, I would say 2013, 2014, which seems like it was yesterday, but it's really not. Like, that was almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? We're at, like, the 7-year mark with my yoga practice. And then about halfway through my journey in 2015 or 16 is when I really got serious of committing to further progress the accessibility of yoga, because somebody who didn't necessarily have the financial means to like commit myself to a studio and commit myself to the luxury part of the industry that yoga kind of falls under, I felt it was like my duty to let people know that like they could feel this good with their body. So that's when I jumped into a 200-hour teacher training.
Oh, I love that. And I think that's something too, like a lot of people are a little bit hesitant to maybe join a yoga studio because it is very intimidating. And also it can be pricey.
Mm-hmm. I love yoga dearly, but as much as I hate to admit it, I think there is a lot of elitism in boutique studios and that kind of market. And I mean, that's like a whole conversation for another day, because I came from Core Power and they're going through a lot of shifts and a lot of changes right now. But I mean, just in the South Jersey area, because that's where I primarily taught before I moved to Phoenix, the common cost of a monthly membership was over $100. Mm-hmm. And like drop-in rates were anywhere from like 15 to 25. And if you think about that, people that are working minimum wage or just above minimum wage make $10 an hour in New Jersey. So they have to work at least 2 hours to cover the cost of a yoga class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, I feel like it's unfortunate too, because yoga is so powerful, can help so many people. And I think that's why I love what Alo Moves is doing so much too, is they're really making yoga accessible for everybody at, you know, a low cost. And there's really just like such a variety of teachers and classes. Like, it's not just yoga either. It's like fitness classes too. And, you know, and some people are just intimidated to go to a yoga studio. You know, like just thinking back to like, you know, even when I first started yoga, I didn't know how to stand on my head, but you know, I'd be in a class and someone would be, and so then I'd be like, oh, like, am I not good enough? You know? And then that whole thing. So it can be intimidating. I mean, it's the same, I think, as like, you know, going to a gym. A lot of people will feel like, you know, really uncomfortable because, you know, there's all these people that are like hardcore, they've been doing it for a long time, and then they don't go.
Right. And I think the biggest trick of that is like acknowledging your ego, right? Like, you see all these people around you doing all these amazing things, whether you're in a yoga studio and somebody's pressing into a handstand or doing an arm balance or a full beautiful split, or you're at a gym and you're sitting there squatting your like little 45 like just bar, and somebody next to you squatting like 200 something pounds. They're not paying attention to you,
right?
They're in their own little world, because just as much as it's an escapism for you, it's an escapism for them. So mm-hmm. They're not trying to focus on what are they doing? I need to check them, like making sure everything's okay with you. They're like trying to make sure everything's okay with themselves. But I do really identify with like the intimidation factor of studios.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my first studio experience. I was greeted by the front desk person, pointed out where to go in the studio, like there's the bathroom, there's the studio. I went into the studio, was weirdly early because I was nervous, tucked myself in the corner in the back of the room,
mm-hmm.
like stumbled through practice because I didn't know like half of the Sanskrit or like what the poses were, and I was like trying to grab from other people in the room,
mm-hmm.
and then I never went back to the studio because I was mortified that I wasn't good enough because my ego was getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to, I had practiced for 2 years in California, gotten my teacher training within those 2 years, moved to New Jersey, and like same habit, same pattern, even as a long time practitioner at that point, not a long time, semi long time practitioner, and a certified yoga teacher that had a quote unquote established practice. I went into a studio, tucked myself in the corner of the room, did my practice, didn't really talk to anybody because there is an unfamiliar identity of you're stepping into a community and you're suddenly the black sheep.
Wow. Yeah, that's so interesting. And I think, you know, that's one thing that I always notice too, like every time I step on the mat, is just like what's happening, what's coming up for me, and what is my ego like trying to take over or like resist, you know? And it really is just about leaving the ego at the door and just showing up like as you are, and know that like my practice is going to look different than your practice, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Like, we're just like all on this journey, just trying to figure it out and be humans.
Right. My favorite, or I should say one of my favorites, because there's many favorites within the yoga world that I love, but I think the principle that keeps pulling me back is the idea of just being there and breathing there. Mm-hmm. This idea that my practice is going to look different than yours, but my practice is also going to look different than mine was yesterday, this morning, tomorrow, next month. And it's not necessarily because I'm going to get stronger or more advanced or seek something out that I haven't done before, but it can also be like so soft and gentle and passive, or very aggressive and rigorous and trying. And it's not about manipulation of the practice. It's allowing your practice to find the cadence that you need it to have.
I love that. And it really is different, like from day to day. Like some days I'm craving, like, I just want to do like one of Bri's classes and go like super hard, like power yoga. And then other days I'm like, okay, I just need to focus in and do like a more slow practice, like restorative. And it really is just about like honoring like what we need that day, and accepting too that like, we're different every single day. Like, we're always changing, and not that it's like, you know, then there's the whole thing of like good or bad, and comparing like, oh, well, yesterday I could do like a full bind, but today for some reason, I don't have that openness in my shoulders, so I can't get there. And then we so quickly will just be like, oh, okay, that's now I'm not as good today. But like, what does that even mean? You know what I mean? Like, our ego just likes to kind of chime in and try to, it's like what you said, like manipulate, right? But it's not, it's about just allowing and flowing.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I just think back to all the times I've been told that the physical asana practice is to prepare the body for meditation, for stillness, for neutrality. And even like in every yoga class, it's pretty common or typical, unless it's a specialized class, to start in some kind of neutral standing, like anatomical neutrality. Mm-hmm. And if you break that down, because this is what I do, my brain's thrive rolls and I overthink things that are probably fairly simple. But if you break that down, it's kind of like a river where you see the surface and there might be a few waves here and there, but it seems steady and calm, where underneath there's this whole current going on and a lot of activity. You might have wildlife, like little fishes swimming. You might have rocks that are moving and shifting with the river. You might have a deep pull or an undertow. I'm not a river specialist. I could be using the wrong terminology.
Love that.
But
maybe that can be a side degree for you.
Right. I should know better. My brother's an oceanographer, so like it's there. But getting back to my point, to the onlooker, I think they see this practice that is very mindful and peaceful, whether that's integrated in the studio and everybody's sitting in a still seat of meditation, or it's integrated online where you have all these beautiful badass yogis holding all these beautiful badass poses, mm-hmm. and somehow their face isn't red, they're perfectly calm, their eyes are closed, there we go, not cold. But you know within your practice and when you're in your body, it's so much more complex than that. Mm-hmm. So to assume that something so complex would look the same day after day, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's like some definition of insanity.
Right.
Not sure. We can check back on that.
100% it is. And actually, let's talk about this, because I think in Western culture, like it can be like a common misconception where there's like the focus on the pose. And we're seeing that so much now with like the culture and society and the age of social media and Instagram, and just seeing like all of these incredible yogis like holding these incredible postures, and maybe people that don't have like the understanding of what the deeper meaning, like what yoga actually is. A lot of people, you know, they just focus on the asana, on the physical practice and the mastery of like a certain pose. But like I said, that's just such a common misconception of like what yoga actually is. And like, we're really missing like the true point of yoga.
Yeah. And I feel like many layers to this situation, but the three most common layers that I feel like people, I don't want to say miss out, I'm not sure what word I want to use there, but the three layers that I feel like I see most often in practitioners are idolizing another person's practice, which like we all have goals and what we want to work towards. Do I wish like I could press like Dylan Warner? Absolutely. Like handstand champion, handstand king. However, what's going to be easy for him mm-hmm. is not what's going to come easy to me. I'm naturally a backbendy person, which if we want to talk like anatomy of a pose, the more mobile your back is, the harder it is to find a straight line. So my handstands and inversions have been a fight since day one, mm-hmm. where like you tell me to tap my toes to my head, I'm like, okay, fine. Same concept can go for anything. Somebody that's a dancer and has been doing ballet for years and years and then found yoga can drop into a split, no problem, for the most part, unless like there's injuries at play. Somebody that's maybe done soccer or no exercise their entire life, they might struggle with splits. So I feel like there's this cloud of what advanced yoga looks like and what asana looks like. And there's this fantasy about it that lacks reality of what can come to you easily and what you might have to work for. Mm-hmm. Second layer is this idea of, am I doing enough? Mm-hmm. Knowing my limits and knowing my maxes, if I don't go for that full like flip grip, tap the toes to the head, beautiful, like dancer's pose, or since I know I can do a full compressed forward fold, am I not getting the benefit of my practice when I use blocks and bend my knees in a forward fold? Mm-hmm. Like there's this misconception of, I can go there, so I should go there all the time. Mm-hmm. Third is, I think, just the downfall of capitalism. People have started to use yoga as a profit instead of diving into yoga as a service, right? Mm-hmm. Like we go to yoga because it serves us. We teach yoga because it serves others. The whole idea around yoga, in my mind, is it's to be of service. Mm-hmm. So when you put a number on it or profitable, tangible label on it like that, like we'll use Core Power as an example. Mm-hmm. Their monthly membership ranges from $140 to $160 a month.
Yeah.
People expect certain results, certain things, certain ideas to come out of that $140, which they should. That's a lot of money they're putting towards something. Mm-hmm. But that puts so much pressure on the physical aspect of yoga that the legends, the myths, the tales, the spiritual, the, for lack of a better word, holier side of yoga mm-hmm. gets swept under the rug. Because mm-hmm. people are there looking at it as a form of, this is what's going to make me fit. And they don't really sit there and pause and go, why does my body feel good after I leave this class?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like missing out on the whole like spiritual aspect of yoga, which is union really with mm-hmm. with ourselves, with our body. Wow. We just went so deep there. I love it. These are just regular conversations, guys. We're just recording a podcast and having a conversation.
Right.
I love it. So what does yoga mean to you then?
I think yoga means something fluid for me. I've always been I don't want to say flighty person, but like my elements are definitely air and ether. Like I'm always like head in the clouds, up in like some other universe, and like never really tethered to anything, which
this is why we're soul sisters.
Yeah, makes sense. Like husband's in the military, so like constantly moving, constantly like changing and progressing, that's something that I like, constantly working towards a change or something new. Mm-hmm. So very much like my partner, I like to call yoga my air conditioning, because I go from like high to low, high to low, high to low, and it's just been this steady stream of air that keeps me consistently present, because it's so easy for me to pull into that area of overthinking about the future, wondering if I'm enough because I'm doing XYZ or mm-hmm. I don't have XYZ, and everybody in my life seems to be doing, we'll take having kids for example, because that's something that
right.
I feel like it's very apparent in my life right now, because I'm at that age where like I'm in between 25 and 30, and that's a societal norm, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows me to understand and acknowledge my worth, and then in turn, turn that into a stable foundation to stand on.
Mm.
Like it doesn't matter what they're doing. Because mm-hmm. I'm okay with who I am.
Mm.
And as somebody that has gone through the ringer with like body dysmorphia, teetering on the edge of like eating disorders,
mm-hmm.
confidence issues, seasonal depression, somebody that's always been so focused on everything that's happening around her, I became a shell for a really long time that just picked up on everybody else. And I think going down to the root of yoga, it's given me a sense of self and a sense of anchoring within said self.
Mm. I love that. And, you know, I feel like very similar to you in that way, that, you know, I've struggled with those things as well, like body image issues, eating disorders, and also just like really focused on like what other people are doing. And the deeper I get into my practice, I just feel like more connected with myself and more grounded, because I can be quite flighty mm-hmm. as well. And, you know, I think that's definitely like one of the benefits that, you know, yoga can really bring into your life if you allow it.
Right.
Yeah,
because there's always that like wall that we get up against that's like, oh, this feels good, am I allowed to feel good? Like I don't know.
Right.
Like, humans are so sadistic like that. The second something feels good and positive, we want to like jump ship and like go overboard and feed ourselves to the sharks.
Right. Self-sabotage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm best at.
Aren't we all, though, at some mm-hmm. level? So how would you say, like, yoga has transformed your life, like, off the mat, aside from, like, everything that you just shared? I know that's a loaded question. You're like, where do I even start with this?
Suddenly, this becomes a therapy session. No, I was very much raised in the belief that you as a female have to be this quiet, meek, fragile little thing. And that's just where I grew up, standards. Mm-hmm. We could blame it on my parents, but they're great. I love them. I got a good relationship with them. So I feel like I need to throw that disclaimer out there. Yeah, I just think it was a number of influences that I had to be this like people pleasing, make sure everybody is taken care of, and like be the provider in that emotional, mental way that I never really focused on myself. And I mean, I feel like I don't want to speak in absolutes because I hate them, and I don't want to speak for a huge population, but I feel like that's a common trait among women if we're going to like dive into that.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost want to say that yoga's made me more brash. Maybe that's not the right word, but like it's definitely pulled out that fighter, that warrior, that like spirit inside of me of I need to constantly fan my flames, and it's okay to disagree with people. It's okay to put my needs first. It's okay to have something that I stand for instead of standing behind everybody else, right? Like how often do we have to, do we hear the expression that behind every strong man is a strong woman? Like, fuck that. Why is that the point? Like, right. Why can't I just be standing up like on my own 2 feet?
Mm-hmm. Preach, sister. Preach, sister.
Also, am I allowed to clap? Like, how PC yeah. is this?
Yes, no, it is. Yeah, you can totally do that.
Trying to like cuss like a sailor. So. Yeah.
And I think too, by, you know, a lot of people, I think, and there's so many layers to this, like going into like really the psychology here of how we are, I guess what we're taught growing up, and you know what we learn not only from our parents but from society and culture, and you know so many of us are just so like, okay, I just need to, if I do this for another person, like I'm gonna be accepted and loved, and we forget about ourselves and we forget to check in with ourselves, and also like, and then you know we're giving from an empty cup, but I think like yoga can really help guide us to, I guess, learning and understanding that like it's okay to fill up our cup first. And in fact, by doing that and showing our and honoring our feelings and honoring like, you know, what's coming up for us and taking the time to really like care for ourselves and love ourselves, we're then able to give back more, like in a larger way, because we have more compassion and love towards ourselves, then we're able to share that on such a deeper level and have it be more fulfilling. Do you know what I mean?
Right. And I feel like it's something that gets so greatly overlooked because it's almost become a cliche at this point, right? Like there's so many self-help books that are so wonderful and beautiful, but they all have this same general message of like, you can't pour from a pitcher that's empty, right? Like you have to have a constant source of something going in the pitcher, whether that something to you is like sparkly bubbly water or like lemon water or soda. I don't know, whatever you want to imagine it is. You have to have a source that's going to allow you to constantly feed into other people. Mm-hmm. And I think the struggle with the society that we are raised in is that there's such a pressure to uphold beauty and societal standards that we often forget our truth and our intention of why we even wanted something in the first place. Weirdly enough, I was watching the Taylor Swift documentary.
So good. I love that. I love it.
But she was talking about how the media like was outraged about her weight gain because she went from like being a 00 to a size 6. And she was talking about how like her body was never meant to be a 00, but she was trying so hard to fit every size like standard that was set in front of her. And she said something along the lines of there's always going to be a standard that you can't have. Mm-hmm. And she compared that to when you're a 00, you don't have the extra weight to have like that nice booty that everybody's wanting right now. And if you're strong enough and stable enough to have said booty, you're not skinny enough for the rep, like to have flat abs or something like that. So I think that, again, going back to like that innate want and need to please everybody, we have to take a step back and realize like, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. And that kind of shakes us to our core, right? Like, mm-hmm. if I looked at like little baby Shauna and was like, you aren't going to be able to take care of everybody, you're going to make people mad, you're going to make people upset, that would have wrecked me, mm-hmm. like to my core. Mm-hmm. So I feel like when we talk about having yourself be something solid and consistent and like constantly pouring into yourself, it's not the idea of I'm pouring in myself so I can reassure others. It's I'm pouring into myself so I can reassure myself.
Mm. Mm. Amen.
Stop with yourself before you check everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, we it's something we constantly need to be reminded to do. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you just have to listen to, like, little flight attendants. You put your mask on before you put on the child's mask.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of masks and breathing, I'm not segueing into COVID, but in my earlier episodes, I did, like, a two-part series about, like, the importance of breath and just how mm-hmm. to really transform our lives. And being a yoga teacher, like, you're someone that, you know, you're probably very aware of your breath and also like aware of the breath of your students. So like, what is your take on the importance of breath and just incorporating a breath practice into our daily lives? Like how can that help us?
Well, let's just
another loaded question, three parts,
another loaded question, layers, multitude, all the things. I mean, that two-part series, which was done beautifully, could have been easily the whole theme of your entire podcast, and you could never run out of anything to talk about. So, I mean, like, it fascinates me because breathing is the first thing we do when we enter this world. Mm-hmm. We do it throughout our lives without, like, usually thinking about it. And it's the last thing that we do before we exit this world. Mm-hmm. Just thinking about that alone, like, how powerful is that? Mm-hmm. It's what keeps our body moving. It's what keeps our body grooving.
It's literally life force.
Yeah. Like, one of the principles of yoga, pranayama, like, yeah. It is life. I really, side note, like, the translation that it's your conversation with God, if you believe in God or a higher power. I think that's like a beautiful way of putting it.
That's a direct translation to pranayama.
I don't know if it's a direct translation or just something that like my teachers interpreted as a translation, so I don't want to say it's absolute because I don't deal with absolutes.
Right, you don't do absolutes, and we're not talking about the vodka.
Yes, I'm more of a gin drinker anyways. But hearing that translation and like coming from somebody that during that time I wouldn't have considered myself very spiritual, it just really hit home how impactful the breath could be. Mm-hmm. And unintentionally, I think yoga makes us really mindful of our breathing, but what happens when you only do that in the space of your mat, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's why the yoga practice feels so good. Like, forget the asana. You sit there and dedicate an hour to focusing on your breath. Mm-hmm. Like, I've solved it.
Yeah. yeah, that's it.
Surprise, everyone. If you don't feel great, just breathe. But I...
So true, though.
Right? I just think that, like, whether it's yoga or meditation, because you could consider those two different things, Chinese medicine, Tai Chi, Native American medicine, you see these patterns of chanting, breath work, oming over and over and over again. And you kind of have to sit there and question what's not to get with the overarching theme of multiple people practicing the same thing. They might have a different approach, but they're practicing control of their breath.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to, I just wrote a paper for this in school, the 50s and 60s, and science has started to get behind that principle. So we have this like beautiful yoga practice that has been around for thousands and thousands of years, which you've touched on in your podcast about breath. But it was only recent that science was like, huh, mm-hmm. maybe we should start paying attention to this. And through that, they've been able to prove that breath work can calm the nervous system, stumbling over my words now. It can help with certain like mental illnesses. It can help with like physical impacts of your body. So I feel like the importance of breath is a no-brainer. It's just, are we actively practicing that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I answered your question.
You know, yeah.
I'm like, I just started rambling and hopefully it was in there somewhere.
It's okay. I love it. Well, and I think too, just like it teaches us, because we need to first have that awareness with anything if we're going to make some sort of change in our life. And by becoming aware of the breath, like we're really just starting to pay attention to like what's coming up, like what we're feeling in our bodies. And our breath tells us so much. Like, oh, okay, I'm feeling like tight around my solar plexus area. Like, why is that? Okay, like, do I have maybe some blocked emotions going on? Like, it really is just a guide to like what's happening in our body. And I think not only just through yoga, but just by bringing awareness back to the breath, because so often, you know, and this was before I was even like super aware of like how powerful the breath is. Like, I, you know, we'd go through the day and we all do this, is we're holding our breath. We're holding our breath without even realizing it, right? So when we bring that awareness and we're like, it's like the watcher. It's like, you know, when we realize that we're not our thoughts, we're going right. Really deep here. And, you know, we start to look at, okay, what is the ego? And realize that we aren't the ego. We're not the thoughts that happen in our brain. Sometimes mm-hmm. those are just voices from, you know, other people's opinions, our own stories that we create in our mind. And we're really the awareness behind that. And I think by becoming aware of the breath too, like that's really a doorway to all of those different deeper dimensions.
Right. I think it allows us to be steady. And it allows us to be inquisitive.
Mm-hmm.
So within the breath, we find this ability to sit with discomfort or comfort, right? It doesn't have to always be the negative. Or maybe you have this example of the discomfort isn't necessarily negative, and it is in fact positive, because like I keep saying a whole nother conversation you're gonna have me on your podcast again. But the breath allows us to interpret what's going on in the body without making it easier or harder. And we just find this steady base where we can maintain. Mm-hmm. While that is happening, it allows us to, like you said, I feel something in my solar plexus. What's going on? And we start to study ourselves, not in a way that you would study like a test rat in a lab, or compare like results of somebody that took, I don't know, ibuprofen every day of their life for 20 years and somebody that didn't. You start to become your own witness, in the sense of like, you had a thought, that thought was interesting, or that thought caught your attention, mm-hmm. but you were not the thought. Mm-hmm. Instead of building this identity of, mm-hmm. I have a certain mindset, so I have to put myself in the constructed box of that mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think a lot of times we will accept it as truth. Mm-hmm.
And like, what is truth anyways? Like, what is absolute? Is it true by your standards because this is what you believe? Mm-hmm. Or is it true by the outside world standards because that's what they believe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trust no one, always question everything. Like, biggest life advice.
Question everything, believe no one, question everything. I feel like we could talk forever, but I do want to be mindful of your time and our listeners' time. So before I go into the final three questions, I wanted to ask you, so for those who are listening who maybe aren't regular yoga practitioners, but maybe they're wanting to start, like what are three or four things that you could recommend to someone who is just kind of starting their yoga journey?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to break it down to like the things I wish I was told when I was starting my yoga journey.
I love it.
Which is, and we covered this in greater detail at the beginning of the podcast, but like, don't care what everyone else is doing. Do what makes you happy and what makes you feel good in your practice and in your body. Don't stress about poses. Just be present and get on your mat. Because when you get on your mat, you create it into this ritual experience, something that's divine and something that's like kind of secretive, and you're like, oh, this is my own little personal practice. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Two, stay curious. Like, whether it's hearing something in a class, maybe it's a pose name, maybe it's the offhanded comment that a teacher made about, oh, this pose has a story behind it, maybe it's how your body feels, maybe it's how your body's not feeling, right? Like, how many times have we stepped into the yoga space and heard that triggering term of warrior two, your body should be feeling blank. Mm-hmm. And then you get really frustrated because your body's not feeling that certain thing. Mm-hmm. It's okay not to feel what's happening or what's being told to be happening in your body. Just be in your body. Mm-hmm. Point number two. I'm trying to wrap these all up in a little bow. And I think my third point would have to be willing to learn, right? Like, every craft you have out there, whether it's somebody learning to fix cars for a living, somebody that's learning to become a marketing specialist, or somebody that's practicing yoga, there's always going to be somebody that knows more than you, and find those people and hold on to them dearly so you can continue to educate yourself and expand your horizons. It took me a long, 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 long time to figure that one out. And it really, in the beginning of my yoga teacher career, prohibited me from tapping into the potential of what my classes could be for me and my students. Mm-hmm. I remember being a new yoga teacher and a new student back in the day before I was teaching yoga. And if a class didn't have like a crescent lunge or a warrior two or a chaturanga, I'd be like, what the fuck? So when I started teaching, I like accidentally put myself in that box of like, this is what a good yoga class has to have. And it wasn't until I had a very dear mentor that just was like, Shauna, what are you doing? No, like you can do whatever you want as long as like you're intelligent and have the knowledge and the compassion and capacity behind it, you're fine.
Mm, I love that. Oh, that was so good.
Nope. Break all the rules, everyone.
Yeah, but it'll be another 30 minutes. So I'm really trying to hold back here. So I have like final three questions for you. So, okay. What is one thing that you couldn't leave the house without?
One thing that I couldn't leave the house without, aside from essentials like keys, wallet, sunglasses, I'm going to categorize my AirPods in the essentials because they're always in my bag because I get calls randomly all the time. A limoncello LaCroix is always in my hand when I step out the door.
That was so specific, like
a limoncello LaCroix. I'm not kidding. I can show you the three cases that I have, and then I have like my whole fridge stocked with them already.
It's I love it.
A bad addiction.
I thought maybe you'd say like a fizz stick or something, but that works too.
I mean, fizz sticks, since they're like flavored, I have to time it right. Right now I have a watermelon bubbly that I do the watermelon fizz with.
Oh, so good. I love the watermelon. It's so good.
So good.
When you're able to travel again, where would you go and why?
Oh, that's so hard. I'm going to go in-state and then internationally. In-state, I really would like to revisit Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds weird. Mainly Louisville. So when Thomas and I were traveling from Jersey to Arizona, we took a road trip. COVID hit during the road trip, but we were supposed to be in Louisville the weekend of the Derby. And I was ready for like a party and a half and like to experience like the life of that city. But we had to stay in our little dinky Airbnb and order food in. And we basically got there 8.
Okay, sorry about that, guys. My internet actually just kicked me off, but we're back.
Louisville, Kentucky, I feel like would be a hoot and a half. Internationally, there's a few places, but right now it's like a real itch for Japan.
Ooh, where?
I don't know, like a quaint little village. Like Tokyo and the bigger cities would be cool, but like if you've ever just looked up pictures of like Japanese countryside, it's so breathtakingly beautiful. It's still my heart. Also, France's countryside. I just have a thing for countrysides.
I love
it. Get me out of the city, unplug me, let me like put on a white dress and eat a baguette and skip down a dirt road.
I saw that like whole scene just like play out in my head. I can see you doing that. I love it. Okay, and the final question, what book are you reading right now?
So many. It's really just like 2 or 3, but the one that has my main attention and my main focus is called My Grandmother's Hands, and it is about dealing with racial trauma within a white body, law enforcement body, and black body, and highly, highly recommend that if you want to dive deeper into the conversation that's happening right now. With Black Lives Matter, it's an excellent tool for that. However, it's also made me unsurface a lot of trauma that I had in the body that I didn't realize had created specific patterns in me.
Mm.
So on top of it being a beautiful masterpiece for the discussion that we're having currently in our COVID climate, it's become a tool of understanding a lot more of why I'm wired the way I'm wired and how I can unwire myself.
Mm, I love that. Yeah, you were telling me about that book like a few weeks ago or a month ago? We were having this conversation. Yeah, I got to get that. It sounds incredible. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I know we could just continue to talk and this would be like a 4-hour podcast, but we'll just
your first one ever.
on again. So just to, like, if people want to find you and practice with you, where's the best place for people to do that? How can they find you?
So as of right now, I am on Instagram as evil_queen with a W instead of a U. Don't ask about the screen name. It was made a long time ago and I've tried to change it many times and it just has kind of stuck around. But in the spirit of keeping yoga accessible, I am teaching a class Wednesdays virtually over Zoom. It's a $5 drop-in, kind of a pay what you can deal. If you want to pay more, you can. If not, and $5 is still a lot because let's face it, it's weird times. Like, let's chat. Like, that's my goal. That's my little life mission right now. In person, nowhere, because COVID's still a very real thing in the United States. So studios are closed down. I'm also open to privates. If you listen to this podcast and you're like, I'm divine and I need to practice with her, we can also talk about that too. But it's really been a blessing as far as like a full-time teacher, because it's easy to lose your practice when you're constantly the one leading and instructing the practice. So kind of put a little break on that and like gotten my practice back.
And you have such a beautiful practice. So y'all reach out to her, go do one of Shauna's classes. You won't regret it. They're amazing. Thank you so much for being on episode 7 of K-Talks. And
thank you everyone
for tuning in and for listening. And I will catch you on the next episode. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of K-Talks. Please hit that subscribe button for a chance to get a shout out for Subscriber of the Week. And also please write a review and let me know what you loved about this episode. I do really want to hear from you and create content that you love and enjoy listening to. It would mean the world to me if you could please share with a friend. And don't forget to tag me at KBellows on social media so I can see you're listening and reach out and connect with you. Until next time, I'll see you later.